In a world where uncertainty reigns supreme, where shadows of chaos dance at every turn, one truth emerges unyielding. Preparation is not a luxury, but a lifeline. Behold the Wellness Company, a beacon of readiness amidst the tempestuous seas of fate. Envision a sanctuary of tranquility, where the tumult of unforeseen medical crises finds no purchase. The Wellness Company's Medical Emergency Kit stands as a bastion of assurance, a fortress of resilience against the unseen foes of health. Within its sacred confines lie the tools of salvation. Ivermectin, to ward off the insidious whispers of disease. Emergency antibiotics, to quell the raging storms of infection. Antivirals, to vanquish the relentless tides of contagion, and more. The Wellness Company Medical Emergency Kit is not merely a collection of supplies, it is the embodiment of preparedness itself. Crafted by the hands of esteemed healers led by luminaries such as Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. James Thorpe, Dr. Harvey Risch, and Dr. Drew Pinsky, this kit stands as the pinnacle of safety, the zenith of prevention. These truth-seeking doctors have forged a testament to vigilance, a testament to the unwavering pursuit of well-being. Embrace the certainty that comes from being armed against adversity. Embrace the Wellness Company, for in its embrace lies the promise of resilience, the promise of a brighter tomorrow amidst the chaos of today. Don't wait for the next crisis to strike. Visit twc.health/strangeplanet and use promo code STRANGEPLANET for an exclusive 10% discount. Prepare today and rest easy tomorrow.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Richard Serrett's Strange Planet. Following the truth wherever it leads. Exposing evil and corruption and the secret machinations of powerful elites. Revealing the high strangeness beneath the surface of our supposed reality. Coming to you from the Great White North and his studio beneath the stairs. Here's Richard.
Hey there, welcome to another edition of Strange Planet and Happy New Year. And if you'd like to get deeper into Strange Planet, you know what to do. Click on that link in the episode notes, strangeplanet.supportingcast.fm, strangeplanet.supportingcast.fm. There are three monthly subscription programs to choose from. Choose the one that's right for you. You gain access to commercial-free listening, bonus episodes that are produced exclusively for premium subscribers, plus you receive a subscription to my monthly newsletter, Inner Sanctum, strangeplanet.supportingcast.fm. I'm going to welcome one of my favorite guests to the podcast, and we're going to do some forecasting. Astrologer William Stickevers is with us once again, and he's got such a broad scope of political, economic, psychological, spiritual, and metaphysical knowledge. William systematically explores possibilities about the future and how they can emerge from the present by weaving current secular trends, geopolitical factors, and mundane astrological portents. He's been a counseling astrologer since 1988, mostly in New York City, and now, I guess, in Las Vegas. And William is well-versed in psychological, horary, electional, medieval, and Renaissance branches of astrology. And that being said, William, welcome back. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Richard. Thanks for having me on the show again.
My pleasure. And before we get rolling here, let's talk about your Global Outlook. This is your eighth annual Global Outlook 2024 webinar that's coming up in February of 2024. What happens in this webinar?
Yeah, in this webinar, we look at what's really going on throughout the world. I look at, basically, I do the full in-depth analysis of every secular trend and how that correlates with the economic, political, and social factors that are showing in the larger mundane transits, using mundane factors in astrology. So what makes this unique is you don't need any understanding of astrology. So in order to understand this, I do all the heavy lifting in terms of that, and I make sure it's very visual and graphic driven so people can understand exactly what these cycles are showing. But essentially, we start off with just a quick year in review of what happened in 2023, see what I got right and what I didn't get right and what I missed. And we do that real quickly. And then we deal with the overview of the major planetary cycles for 2024, the macroeconomic and the geopolitical cycles. Then we do black box forecasting, where I look at the countries of the largest GDP, of the top 12 countries, and we look at and see what their black boxes are showing. And then we look at the global trouble map, and then we look at the biggest geopolitical macroeconomic time bombs for 2024 and much, much more. So we cover the whole gamut, and I make sure there's a lot of takeaway where there's actionable intelligence where people can make more informed decisions for themselves by the end of these webinar.
What is a mundane astrology?
So mundane just means the world, the globe. The concept back in the day when the Greeks came up with that term was that the world was alive, that there was an intelligence, there was a global intelligence that forms and informs and impacts our daily lives and decision-making. So although we may have personal agency, it is not completely that agency in and of itself independently that determine the outcome or shape the outcome of our lives. There is a participatory mystique taking place between the mundus, the macro, the mundane, which using astrology, we can determine what is the weather outlook. Right. So although the weather may not stop you from doing X, Y, and Z, it may delay it. Right. You may make certain changes. You may decide, right. There may be certain types of situational changes that will influence the outcome of an event. You see this with rocket launches when they scrub a rocket launch due to inclement weather, for instance. So the idea of mundane is that we could look at larger cycles. We could look at what's happening in the world, that the chart of the world, if you will, the world, the earth, civilization has a horoscope. And through using different techniques, we can see what is that horoscope telling us about the world we are going to be living in, where our agency is going to be impacted by that.
You mentioned one of the things that you do in the Global Outlook webinars, you talk about things you got right and things you got wrong in 2023. Can you give us just a taste, like give us one thing that you nailed, you got right, and one thing you didn't get right?
Yeah, I actually haven't looked at that list yet because I wanted to wait until the end of December.
Okay.
That being said, though, what I got right was that the economy would continue to be on a slow grind where it would look outwardly like the economy, like the stock market is fine. We would have some close calls. But looking underneath the stock market, we would see a steady deterioration of all the different fundamentals that would look eerily similar to what happened in November, December of 2007, which many people don't know was the beginning of the great financial crisis. It actually started then. It didn't become obvious to everyone until September 15, 2008. So we're in the same position. And that was one of the predictions I did get right, that it's going to be a slow grind and we're going to see currency devaluation. And because of that, we're going to see much more inflation. They're going to mitigate the inflation, but right? They'll tell you that inflation is now under control, but everyone will know differently. And we're going to see an acceleration of that next year. In terms of what I got wrong, I thought there would probably be I thought there would be a much bigger escalation in Ukraine than there was. It seemed like the Russians did not do the. It seemed like, well, we knew what I got right was the Ukrainian counteroffensive would fail, but I believe the Russians would impose an offensive of their own, which didn't quite pan out the way we thought.
Yeah, it's the Russian strategy in Ukraine is a lot like the economy, a slow grind. It just seems like they dig in, they put in these defensive positions, they invite the Ukrainians to kind of attack, and then they just grind them down until, you know, there's nothing left of the Ukrainian armed forces virtually.
That's right. Yeah.
I want to talk
absolutely.
To you. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. Do you want to add to that before I?
No, we could talk more about it in a bit. It's just that, yeah, absolutely. I thought that Putin would be positioning to invade Western Ukraine in order to invoke peace talks. Basically, once the Ukrainian offensive failed, that he would position his troops in a much more aggressive way. Now, that may still happen. So that was one thing I did get wrong. But it may be a delay, not so much that I got it wrong, because I do think he is going to force the West's hand in saying, if you want to put an end to this, right, if you're not willing to do this soon, I'm willing to force the issue.
Right. Well, Ukraine may be in that position soon as well, forced to negotiate, because it seems like the spigot is being turned off now. Further funding to Ukraine, at least in the United States, is being sort of bundled together with talks for money for the southern border, for border security. And unless that deal is struck, doesn't look like Ukraine's going to get any more money from the United States for a while. So that could
absolutely.
I want to talk to you about something that keeps me up at night, and I know a lot of my listeners, and that is all of this talk about the introduction of a central bank digital currency. And I know this is something the Bank of International Settlements is really pushing for. President of the EU, is it Christine Lagarde? No, that's not Lagarde. Someone else. Anyway, it's the president of the EU has been talking about. Well, they've just kind of introduced a European digital currency. Jeremy Powell, chair of the U.S. Fed, has talked about it, saying it's not going to happen right away, but, you know, eventually. What are your thoughts? How likely are we to get a central bank digital currency? And if so, when?
Well, we're likely to see smaller countries, particularly in Europe, begin to experiment with CBDCs. There's 114 countries exploring this, and 60 are in advanced stages, and 11 have fully launched their own CBDC already. So it's, you know, the cat is out of the bag, if you will. So 7 economies and most of the G20 countries are actively developing the CBDC. However, there are some problems with it, because a CBDC is only as good, can only be effective if there's a federated digital identity assigned to each citizen. Also, the CBDC bypasses the commercial banking system and is completely controlled by the federal banking system. So that would mean basically the Federal Reserve or the European Central Bank would essentially put out of business all the banks throughout Europe and the United States. So that's what it implies. So there's a bit of ways to go on that. I would think that what we're going to see is the payment rails be the first thing deployed, which we're already seeing happening now. So before they can really have a viable CBDC alternative, which according to them will give them increased payment efficiency, right? And complement other financial services, people will be able to pay their taxes, et cetera, right? So there's going to be this incentivization rolled out. You will need federated digital IDs, which is a federated identity in information technology, which will link a person's identity or their electronic identity, and those attributes will be stored across multiple distinct identity management systems and across various domains or various systems and domains worldwide. So it's really building an infrastructure in place for federated digital identity, and then putting in the policy and laws that will bind a will make it mandatory for everyone to have a federated digital identity. So that has to be in place before you have before you can really deploy a CBDC. You could have a CBDC that operates on certain types of payment rails, blockchain payment rails that are centralized. Because remember, it's a centralized blockchain, not a distributed, decentralized blockchain. So I don't see that happening next year. There should be concern about it because there's privacy concerns. The CBDC will, once it's in place, there will be excessive government oversight and controls over individuals' financial activities. If you apply for a job, the potential employer could look at every transaction you made. It'll all be on a record where they'll have an access to that information. So this really borders on issues of personal freedom versus state control. I see that more happening in 2026. So I don't see any legal pathway right now, and the infrastructure is not there. They certainly don't have the federated digital ID. There's no agreement yet amongst nations, and most certainly the U.S. will be the last one because it would require a complete revisioning of the entire system based on the entire system, like the Bretton Woods model of payment, where payment settlement right now between all nations occur in U.S. dollars. That's one of the reasons why America can keep printing dollars out of thin air, because all these dollars get sucked up by other countries who are required, based on the rules that was set in place since 1944, to hold dollars as a means of trade settlement and, most importantly, for the purchase of oil, so petroleum. And that, for the U.S. to switch to a CBDC and to go and enforce other nations to start using CBDC as part of their global bank reserves, or convert those CBDCs into treasuries, et cetera, that is going to take a complete revisioning, and that's not going to happen very fast. It's going to be a very political, problematic path to get there. But the first step, of course, is getting the CBDC payment rails integrated and then deploying a federated digital ID.
Should we be concerned, or are we right to be frightened by the prospect of the marriage or the blending of a CBDC with a social credit regime?
Oh, absolutely, because they'll completely have complete control over everything. The main thing they want to do is create a deflationary currency to mitigate inflation. So what they want to do is they can inject a lot of money in the system, but if you are required based on your social ID and your spending habits, which they will have a complete track record and using an AI system to constantly monitor that and constantly improve on the algorithm, they could determine uniquely for you when that money would be destroyed. So in other words, you would be injected X amount of a CBDC into your personal bank account that's connected to your federated digital identity. That identity would then provide information back to the centralized AI system that is running it, and it would determine based on your behavior, when, what you could spend that money on, and how long it would take before that money gets destroyed. In other words, some individuals, it would take them 30 days. They have to spend all that money. And for some other individuals, because they're better behaved, they could spend that money over a 60 and 90 day period before that money gets destroyed, making it a deflationary currency, but while creating inflation, right, to ensure that economies don't collapse. The main thing governments and central banks cannot really fight is deflation, but they want a deflationary currency like Ethereum and create an inflationary economic model at the same time. And this is one of the driving reasons they really want to move forward with this. Plus, you could call yourself a democracy and you could reelect Trudeau in a landslide again. And that's a bit of a joke.
but a joke. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. He's only got an 18% approval rating at this point from the last poll I just read. But here's the thing. The thing is that it would technically be a democracy to a degree, but it'd be a totalitarian democracy where it, on the outside, from the looks of it, it looks like a democracy, but everything is being centrally controlled at every level.
Yeah, that's frightening. What in that system, is there room for, I mean, investments and personal savings, or they just, you know, if we go to a guaranteed income type system, because AI and robotics are going to displace all of the jobs, they're going to give everyone a guaranteed income. So they'll put X number of units into your account, and then after 30 days, they take it out, they destroy it. So there's no more savings, there's no more investments.
Well, no, they would actually encourage people to put money into certain things that they want to, they need capital for. So government has a way of doing that now in the United States, where if you structure your taxes properly, you can put money into certain investments the government wants people to put their money into, and you can completely write that off. That's why most wealthy people pay zero taxes. They pay very little in federal taxes, almost zero. In fact, zero in many instances, because what they're doing is they're taking all the profits, a certain percentage of their profits, and moving those profits into certain investments in certain industries that the government will reward them with by giving them that tax write-off. So you're going to see where there'll be incentivization to use the CBDC in certain ways, and that's another way they can manage behavior. So they're doing applied perception management programs, and then they're doing payment modification or expenditure programs to get you to behave and put your money in certain areas they want you to, and make it for very difficult or problematic to put your money in other things such as gold and any other type of currency, or let's say crypto, that would represent a threat to the system.
Well, gold and crypto certainly would be a threat to the system. So is that the way to, on an individual level, for us to avoid this, tyrannical authoritarian control over all aspects of our lives through a central bank digital currency coupled with a digital identification wallet, mm-hmm. if you will? Is the idea then we got to move into crypto, Bitcoin or Ethereum and gold now before this happens?
Well, I think that Bitcoin represents the emergence of a new monetary system. It's not just Bitcoin. The fact is, Bitcoin, you know, 3 years ago, about this time 3 years ago, Bitcoin was 3,000. Now it's what, 40 plus thousand. And you will now see Wall Street is about to inject somewhere between 16 and 30 trillion starting March 10th into Bitcoin. And that will push Bitcoin's total market capitalization to surpass gold. So Bitcoin will be worth more than all the gold held in a central bank's reserves combined. So, right, all the gold in the world will not even be equivalent to the valuation of Bitcoin. That's going to happen between now and 2025, 2026, but it really begins in earnest starting this spring. So the thing is that when that happens, we're going to see a massive game changer, because you already have what, you know, 416 million wallets worldwide at this moment, right? That will go to a billion. So you'll see about a billion wallets this time next year in Ethereum, Bitcoin, you know, what basically token Bitcoin and Ethereum. I mean, the other coins will also be included in that, but those will be, you know, 80% of all investments will be mainly in Bitcoin and partly in Ethereum. And so that means that, you know, we're moving faster towards a decentralized system of finance. And it's no longer going to be a trend, but it's going to be a movement starting next year with the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction. And so you have to also keep in mind that Bitcoin was born for a need as an alternative to the traditional banking system, a parallel financial system, resilient to global economic pressures, resilient against government policies, government control, financial repression. So we're now seeing a major exponential growth in the crypto population. What I'm seeing here is by the time they get around to putting everything in place for the CBDC, the world will have moved on. Instead of becoming a more centralized world will become a more decentralized world, decentralized finance, decentralized finance, decentralized AI, decentralized, right? Despite what's going on. So that is the counter. There's the trend where we're going to see more and more centralization happening on the part of government out of desperation. And now we're seeing parallel systems emerge. And we're going to see the parallel financial system really take off in a very powerful way next year.
Will central governments, will the Bank of International Settlements and all of the different organizations that are pushing for a CBDC be able to stop this decentralization, the move into decentralized cryptocurrency?
It's too late. They can't. They realized they couldn't. China did it, and China is all into Bitcoin. They launched their Hong Kong crypto market. They're getting their banks to back those coins, those cryptos. They're allowing crypto banking. So there's a merger of the fiat system and the parallel crypto financial decentralized system. They are now merging in Hong Kong because China failed at it and they realize they can't stop it. This is like trying to get people who just saw the Beatles on Ed Sullivan in February 1964 to go back to listening to Frank Sinatra by forcing all the radio stations play Frank Sinatra music. Not going to happen, right? That they would, I mean, you know, they, you know, it's sort of like the Cultural Revolution started and it was no going back. So we're going to see starting January 10th when BlackRock gets approval for the spot Bitcoin ETF, where people can take money in their 401k and move that into Bitcoin. There's going to be no going back after that. We're moving towards a decentralized financial system, decentralized way of valuation, where valuation is now a global rather than a national, right? Countries print money and that gives them ultimate power and control. Why? Because they force you, the federal government forces you, right, to pay taxes in the federal currency. That's what gives government power, that you can't pay them in Bitcoin, you can't pay them in gold. So we're going to see a counter to that starting next year.
Sounds like a very positive development to me. I mean, decentralization, lack of, you know, central control. That sounds good to me.
Yes. And here's the other thing too. Like if you were to put money, let's say if you put $50 a day, you had $50 a day going back 10 years and you put $50 a day in gold and then you put $50 a day in the stock market and you put $50 a day in Bitcoin. So we would be investing $150 a day. And for some people, that's not a lot of money, right, to invest the day in. But if someone were to do that going back 10 years ago, the person who invested $50 a day in gold would have $222,000 today. The person who invested money in the stock market would have $233,000 today. Not much more, right? Mm-hmm. Not much more than gold. And there's a lot more risk with the stock market. And Bitcoin, if they invested $50 a day, they would have $4,580,000 in Bitcoin.
Wow.
And people who understand money and they understand finance, they follow the markets, they see this happening and it's getting stronger. So gold is going to become irrelevant, not right away, but starting next year, people are going to say, you know what? I'm going to sell half my gold and put it into Bitcoin.
Hmm. Interesting. All right. You've given me some things to think about. William, yeah. We'll take a quick time out, come back. William Stickivers, as we discuss astrology, the economy, geopolitics, right here on Strange Planet.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's time to redefine reality. This is Richard Serrett's Strange Planet.
Astrologer William Stickivers is here, williamstickivers.com. And don't forget to sign up for the Global Outlook 2024 webinar that's happening February 10th, 2024. Authentic Astrological Talismans, Paradigm Shift, Jupiter-Uranus Talisman Program, and the 8th Annual Forecast Webinar, Geopolitical Macroeconomic Forecast, and also the Regulus Financial Astrology, the fourth quarter 2023 forecast, Financial Astrology. A lot going on there with the Global Outlook 2024 webinar. Again, williamstickevers.com. The link is in the episode notes. Let's talk geopolitics and what's happening in the Middle East. Where do you see in 2024 Israel's attempt to basically destroy Hamas? Is it going to take most of 2024 to accomplish that, or will it even succeed?
I do think it will succeed. I think by April, by the eclipse of 2024, we'll see a cessation of hostilities where a majority of the tunnels and infrastructure in Gaza will be destroyed. The scale of the destruction is going to be tremendous, mirroring the severity of the historical events like World War II with the World War II bombings. So we're going to see substantial increase of international diplomatic efforts aimed at securing a ceasefire, but I'm seeing Israel moving forward as they destroy more infrastructure and tunnel systems, and those weapons systems that are in place within that structure from northern Gaza down to southern Gaza. So I see that happening. That's going to be a big. Issue. The heightened humanitarian response globally is also going to be a big issue. And I see Biden putting a tremendous amount of political pressure on Israel. And it's also going to cause a major reevaluation of the positions and policies regarding the conflict up to date. So we're going to see just more increased escalation of fighting. And then the continued violence and magnitude of destruction will only further strain the already tense situation in the Middle East between Israel and Palestine, leading to an escalation cycle of violence, where which has the implication of bringing in other players, that the level of destruction and the aftermath will definitely alter the dynamics in the regional alliances as they currently stand now. So there'll likely be an increased involvement from major powers such as Russia and China in Iran, and that will all be happening around the time of the April eclipse of 2024. I believe it's the April 9th or April 4th eclipse. I don't remember offhand, but it's in early April. So we're going to see that happen. And I'm just seeing more escalation and fighting there. There may be periodic 10-day ceasefires for humanitarian reasons because of the pressure on the Israeli government, but I don't see them backing off. They are committed, for better or worse, to destroying the entire Hamas, the infrastructure in Gaza, along with some other assets that they have.
What comes after Hamas?
Yeah, so that is where we touch on World War III. So that's where we have that. We certainly are in the first phase of a third world war, and people would think that's outrageous, what I just said. But if you think about it, when did World War II really start? World War II really started around 1935 when Japan invaded Manchuria. And Germany acquired the Sudetenland, and then it acquired the Anschluss of the annexation of Austria. And there was a series of other events. That's all happening in the mid to late 30s before the big guns came out, and the big, before September 1st, 1939, it was a lot of things happening leading up to it. In fact, what was interesting, a lot of people don't know this, is even after they declared war, France, Britain, and Germany didn't really fight each other for a year. They called it the phony war. Hmm. They declared war on each other, and there was very little fighting because nobody was really ready to fight.
Interesting.
So it wasn't until what, May of 1940, right? When then Germany invaded everyone simultaneously.
Yeah, the bombing blitz.
Yeah. Well, they invaded France. They invaded Greece. They invaded how many countries? They invaded everybody, right? Mm-hmm. So, and they were successful, and they invaded North Africa, and they were taking out countries within hours to days, not weeks to months. So it was a long process of war from 1935 all the way up until America enters the war in December of 1941.
So
we're seeing the same thing happen today.
Yeah. And the start would be what, the Russian invasion of Ukraine, or does it even go before that?
Before that, I think when Russia annexed Crimea in 2014.
Wow.
Yeah. So that would be like when Japan invaded Manchuria. Everyone thought, that's a one-off. This isn't going to spread. And it did.
So then what's the next domino?
Yeah, well, that's what I'm looking at. I mean, I really see the situation with Taiwan going from, becoming much more problematic next year. So it's really hard to see, you could see intimations of war symbolically being articulated in the mundane importance. But it's very hard to say, okay, this is the moment when the trigger is going to be pulled. You could see when someone comes, is ready to pull the trigger. That's not difficult to do. Any astrologer who knows their craft can do that. Then it requires to really understand what's going on at the at the geopolitical level, and to understand all the trends. So right now, what I'm seeing here is more of the prospect where the situation between the U.S. and Taiwan is going to become even more problematic than it is now. And that's where we should be looking for a type of event that can trigger a full-blown conflagration.
Well, President Xi of China told Biden to his face, I guess, during his last state visit to the U.S., when they cleaned up San Francisco and were flying
communist
Chinese flags everywhere. Xi told Biden to his face, Taiwan and China will be reunited.
Right.
So he's laid down the gauntlet.
Right. And his position in power and his ability to sustain power is all predicated on Taiwan. His reelection, his third reelection, is completely predicated on reacquiring Taiwan before the end of his term in 2027 or 2028. I think it's 2027.
Hmm. So if he fails to do so, he's out.
He'll be out. They'll take him out. You know, this is China. This is not Canada. This is China. They'll take him out. Like Russia, they'll take him out. If Putin would have backed down one inch, they would take him out. You're talking about completely different civilizations.
Yes.
Completely different cultures. Yeah.
Yeah, they do it. Well, they do it in the United States. It's just a little different. their methodology.
That's right. Like what they're doing to Trump, of course, right?
Yes.
They got to take him out.
That's right.
Trump is a greater threat to the deep state than Xi Jinping or Putin ever was combined.
Interesting.
He's a greater threat to them.
Well, let's take another time out when we come back. Let's talk about 2024 and November 2024 and who the combatants, who the nominees will be. I mean, Joe Biden's certainly not a shoo-in at this point. I have serious doubts whether he can survive another 6 months, let alone another 11 months. Back with William Stickever, his astrologer, when Strange Planet continues.
It's time to redefine reality. This is Richard Serrett's Strange Planet.
All right, so most of us assume, you know, that Trump will be the nominee. Although, you know, we know that the Democrats and the weaponized departments of justice and so forth are going to try right to the bitter end to find any way, hook or by crook, to eliminate him, whether it's taking him off ballots in various states and so forth. It doesn't seem to matter. Whatever they do, he just continues to galvanize his support. And the Democrats are just bleeding one constituency after another. The Hispanic vote, the black male vote, suburban women, young people now all voting for Trump. Is he going to be the nominee? What do the stars say?
Absolutely, he'll be the nominee. There is a 82% chance he will be the nominee. 82%. DeSantis, about a 12% chance. And when I look at Nikki Haley, that's all artificially created. She has less than a 4% chance. She will bomb. I mean, Nikki Haley is a creation of the deep state. So, So, first of all, the Supreme Court is going to reverse. That's another prediction. They're going to reverse any ruling that was made by the Colorado Supreme Court. They're going to find that. They're going to throw that out right away. Secondly, this is only going to galvanize Trump even further. You know, what most people don't seem to realize is that the Colorado decision, on top of everything else they're doing to Trump, is only going to make his poll numbers rise even more, making it more likely that Trump will beat and defeat Biden decisively in November of 2024. So it's just amazing to me that it seems like the too smart to fail Democrats and the deep state operatives are doing Trump's work for him.
The question to me is, so is Joe Biden going to be the nominee? I can't imagine, he's one fall away from ending up in a long-term care facility, and the mental deterioration is just accelerating. Right. I can't imagine he's going to survive until November. And we hear, you know, I was just speaking with Wayne Allen Root on my daily program, and he seems pretty confident it's going to be Michelle Obama, because they're having the convention in Chicago. That's the Obama's old stomping grounds. That would be a great place to coronate Michelle Obama. What did the stars say?
My stars say no Michelle Obama. Zero on that one. Okay. So that, look, I look at her chart and I've, you know, I've had every astrologist tell me, you're going to be wrong on this. You're going to be wrong. I'm like, no, I'm seeing, you know, in terms of the astrology, and as much as this is embarrassing to say, that Kamala Harris's chart is showing more and more strength. So this is what I see playing out here. Biden, they'll let Biden win all the different primaries. He doesn't have to show up. He's going to use a Rose Garden strategy. There's no campaigning, right? And people, the Democrats will vote for Biden regardless. So everyone that voted for Biden in 2020 are going to vote for him regardless. That number is not going to move. That's a solid number, right? Everybody else is going to be split between voting for Trump and voting for RFK Jr. And in terms of Biden, I see him deterioration accelerating and intensifying. I mean, it's already at a point where, you know, it's a mystery to me why the Democrats and the deep state, for that matter, keep backing him. He's fast becoming a punchline of jokes, not just at home, but around the world. And so it just shows me that they're acting totally out of desperation. So, Biden is not a shoo-in for the Oval Office in 2025, starting January 2025. But they want you to believe that. And that is why you're going to see the same person who voted. Well, let me just put it this way. A majority of the people who voted for Biden will vote for Biden regardless what goes on in 2024. We could be in a full-blown depression. We could have World War III with China. We could have all these tragic things happening. And they will still vote Democrat on the ticket. But those who've been impacted, right, where they haven't seen Bidenomics work to their advantage, or, you know, because there's going to be a lot of touting that Bidenomics is working, they're going to deny a recession. The recession is coming. Credit markets are going to start cracking up. They're going to have to reverse the interest rates. They're going to start putting stimulation and liquidating and offer a lot of candy out there in order to prevent a full-blown economic debacle. And in that process, they will deny a recession is going on. But the people who get impacted by that, who feel they can't vote for Trump, will vote for RFK. So that is going to hurt the Democrat platform, where you're going to see disaffected voters who voted Democrat last time vote for RFK or any other independent. And it will be enough to give Trump a decisive edge, particularly in Georgia, Wisconsin, and Arizona, the three states he must win. If he wins those states, then he wins.
And if it's not, well, the stars are saying Biden is going to be the nominee, or?
The stars are saying that Biden will not be the nominee. The question is like, I'm asking myself, you know, it will Kamala be the nominee, or will somebody else be pulled in? So,
but it's not right. Michelle Obama. Definitely not Michelle.
Not Michelle Obama. And here's the reason why. It's very simple. When Xi Jinping came to San Francisco, who did he first meet with and spent a good time talking to? The governor of what?
Gavin Newsom, California.
That's right. What does that tell you?
Interesting.
The DNC and the deep state have determined that Gavin Newsom is going to be the person they plan to pop in last second in a contested convention between Kamala Harris and Gavin Newsom. However, Harris's astrology is very strong this year. I'm going into next year. It's very strong.
Interesting.
So, yes. So I wouldn't take her out. I mean, I think it'd be great if it was Kamala versus Trump. That would just be a great election, right? So,
I mean, a great debate. I would love to see her on the debate stage. Good Lord.
Right. So, you know, the thing is that it's not going to be Michelle Obama. That much we can be certain about. The question is, who is it going to be? Who is it going to be? And based on all the evidence, it's going to be basically a battle between those two.
Are the Democrats going to try and steal it?
Well, that's another issue. That's something we could revisit in another show. Okay. Because that would just take that we should dedicate time in terms of how they're going to steal it, how they would steal it if they're going to steal it, and what would Trump have to do, or how would the vote have to turn out in order to prevent that from happening?
All right. We saw in Argentina the election of Javier Milei, who calls himself a radical libertarian and an anarcho-capitalist. He's also been called a chainsaw Thatcherite, which I love. Do you see a further rise of, let's call them, national populist parties and governments in, mm-hmm. let's say, South America and in Europe in 2024? We've got elections coming up in Europe in 24 and in 25.
Yes, I do. We have a Jupiter-Uranus conjunction. The last time we had that was back in 2010, 2011. What did we have? We had Arab Spring. We had 24 countries go into full-blown revolution and remove fundamentalist Muslim Brotherhood governments, which anybody would say that's just totally impossible. You'll never see the Muslim Brotherhood-based fundamentalist governments be removed. They've been in power since World War II. And they ruled by an iron fist, and they were all removed and removed very quickly. People don't talk about that, right? So the type of grassroots activism movements, it's just not going to be exclusive to South America. It's going to be worldwide. This is going worldwide. Political reform is going, you know, it's going to rise up during any campaign. And I believe there's, 40 elections? Next year, there's over 40 elections worldwide next year, that there's more elections going on than any other time. A record number of elections will be held next year. So we're going to see major, major repolarization, and we're going to see the youth generation very energized. The millennials are going to determine who's going to be president, who's going to be senator, who's going to be prime minister. All the baby, anyone who's born 1961 or earlier are not going to have any impact in determining the election like they have been for the past 30, 40 years. So the past 40 years, whatever the baby boomers have been focused on, right, we could pretty much determine who's going to be the nominees and who would ultimately win. This is the big game changer that nobody sees coming.
Gen X, at least time has arrived.
The Gen X and the millennials.
Yeah.
The Gen X and particularly the millennials. So they're going to be really energized this time because they feel jilted.
What's Europe going to look like in the next several years in terms of the composition of governments? Is it going more right, more nationalist, populist, more right wing?
I see, like, for instance, AfD, which is like an alt-right
alternative for Deutschland.
In Germany. Yeah, in Deutschland, right? You know, they're definitely, I see that gaining power. I think they're going to be the dominant party. So I do see I see those type of movements, like what we saw in, we just recently saw in Dutch elections.
Yes.
Right. So we're going to see that all come back in sweeping numbers next year. Maverick independent third party candidacies or candidacies, you would say, oh, yeah, that guy has great positions and I would vote for him, but he'll never make it. He's going to make it or she's going to make it.
What about
people who capture the anti-establishment mood,
right,
but have real substance to them? Are going to upend the traditional partisan dynamics that have been dominating since 1945.
Interesting. Well, I'm going to bring it back to the United States then for a minute. Having just heard what you said, let me ask you about the future. I don't know. I didn't ask you about this before. I don't want to put you on the spot, but it just struck me when you're talking about, you know, young people, upstarts, people with substance, Vivek Ramaswamy. Have you looked at his charts recently? What do you see for his future?
Yeah, I mean, his chart is very powerfully activated at this time. It's possible that Trump could pick him as a VP, or we may see a female millennial or Gen X VP. So I'm looking at the or certainly I would have said this about DeSantis, who's also a Gen Xer. I would have said DeSantis would be definitely the VP, but he's taken such an anti-Trump position and tripled down on it. I think it's almost impossible to reconcile that. But it's still in politics, right? It makes interesting bedfellows, especially when you have extreme partisan, you know, when you have very extremist type of politics happening at the grassroots level. And that's exactly what I see happening. So we're going to see a Gen Xer president, the first Gen Xer president in 2028. That's 100% probability. We're not going to see it happen in 2025. But by January 2029, the first Gen Xer, possibly millennial, will become president. And that's the transition that we're seeing. And the people are going to make that happen. And the people, this particular election is going to determine who's going to be the leaders going out for the next 30 years, next 20, 30 years, starting with this election.
Last question, and has to do with UFOs, UAPs, ET disclosure. We've had some explosive testimony from military whistleblowers, David Grush and others. Where do you see 2024 taking us vis-a-vis disclosure?
Yeah, so in terms of what Jupiter Uranus will do in regards in terms of how it's connected to the body politic, the implications could be a potential catastrophic UAP disclosure event. And that would entail where instead of where there was a legal pathway to do a structured disclosure. Now that's all been basically pulled, you know, that's off the table now. So what I'm seeing here is we're going to be more explosive leaks, more whistleblowers coming forward, more hearings, more direct eyewitnesses, more, we're going to see, catastrophic or uncontrolled disclosure, which I would characterize as a chaotic release of compelling, convincing, earth-shattering revelations from high-level whistleblowers. Like, we're going to have a Edward Snowden or a series of Edward Snowdens who go to journalists, present the evidence, present their cases, and this all starts happening like globally. It's not just coming out of one newspaper in Germany, for instance. It's going to be happening everywhere and all at once, which will result in profound geopolitical, social, and economic upheaval while the election is going on.
Wow.
While the U.S. election is going on.
Oh.
Yes. That's the thing a lot of people aren't thinking about. The Biden administration does not want disclosure. That's become very clear. Trump, on the other hand, he wants to be the disclosure president because that would put his place in history. He'll be remembered as the guy who disclosed the greatest secret cover-up and revelation in the history of humanity.
Maybe it'll
all happen. That's his goal.
Maybe disclosure will happen on Tucker Carlson's new network.
Right. So that certainly Tucker Carlson will be an agent. It could be you. It could be coast to coast. It could be all of you happening simultaneously where catastrophic uncontrolled disclosure begins and accelerates and intensifies. So it begins starting around April of next year. It's everything goes quiet. Everyone thinks it's all over with. The bill didn't get pushed through. They took out all the provisions. Or they made it a toothless UFO disclosure bill, right? They're going to go back to their old tricks, and then boom.
Are you positive? Are you feeling positive about the future, the immediate future, or is it going to be a rough road for a while?
Going to be a rough road, but it's getting clearer. There's going to be more clarity this time. It's going to become much clearer where the future is moving towards. I'm not pessimistic at all. I think we're just overdue. This is all overdue. This all needs to happen, and it needs to happen sooner rather than later. because we're going to be transitioning into a new period starting 2032. So we need to get this all settled. We've created a fractional reserve banking system that's unsustainable, a fiat-based system that's unsustainable. The structure of government since 1945 and the way the role government has played is unsustainable. So all of these systems are collapsing. All these institutions are collapsing. And it needs to happen actually faster. In the chaos will emerge a whole new system that will be sustainable, that will move us towards a 21st century type one civilization.
All right. Make sure to sign up for the Global Outlook 2024 webinar, williamstickivers.com. The link is in the episode notes. And always a pleasure, William. We'll do this again, obviously, before the election. There's much to discuss. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Richard, for having me again.
A new Richard Serrett's Strange Planet drops every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.